You're listening to Fit Girl, Your Guide to Getting in Shape, the podcast dedicated to helping you separate fact from fiction in fitness. For more details about this podcast and other episodes, visit fitgirlpodcast.com. This is podcast episode number 303. In this episode, it's all about abdominal training, the good, the bad, the common mistakes. And we're going to delve into the secrets of abdominal training and uncover the 6 mistakes holding you back from ab progress. Plus, I'll reveal 3 powerful tips to sculpt the midsection you've always wanted. You're going to learn which exercises are best for shaping and toning the abs and which exercises are pretty much useless. If you've been using the weight loss workout program that I had in the last episode, you'll be happy to know that the entire program is available online, and I will put a link to that in the description here in the podcast and on the podcast homepage, so you can check it out at fitgirlpodcast.com. Of course, you can find everything also at fitnessmakeover.com. Without a doubt, the biggest mistakes I see when people are trying to get in shape and lose weight and focus on their flat stomach is abdominal training. And pretty much every single day in the gym, majority of the people I see are doing ineffective exercises, or they are falling prey to one of these 6 big mistakes that pretty much guarantee you are not going to see results. So let's just jump right into the first mistake, and that is using too much weight. Inevitably, every single gym has some sort of abdominal machine that everyone wants to get on and crank up the weight, thinking that more is better and that they're really strong in the abs and they really need to do a lot of work on them to get them lean. And none of that's going to work. And the worst thing is that if you're using too much weight for the abdominals, you're going to strain your lower back. And obviously, then you're not going to make any progress at all. You really don't need to use a whole lot of weight for the abdominals because they're focusing on spinal flexion. And that means lifting your body or lifting the lower half of your body is what the abdominals do. And that's already a lot of weight. You don't need much more to get them stronger. They are small muscles. And when you actually think about those small muscles being used to lift your entire body, you'll realize that, you know what, that's a lot of weight in and of itself. And when most people are training abdominals, they're not actually using the abdominals to initiate the movement. They're lifting their body and then they're squeezing the abdominals. And there's a huge difference between actually targeting the abdominals to move your body versus moving your body and then squeezing the abdominals. And the problem is that most people have never learned how to actually activate those muscles, let alone other muscles in the body, and they don't know how to target them and how to use them to initiate the movements. And sometimes we have to back off the weight and even go to the basics to relearn what we kind of learned the wrong way a million years ago. So sometimes slowing down the exercises, taking off the weight, not even using a machine until you can really figure out how to use the abdominals to move your body in the way that they are intended. Now, in addition to using your abdominals to actually lift your body, you also use them in every single movement that you do when it comes to weight training, especially if you are doing challenging lifts. And these might be heavy in the sense that it's more weight than you could do 12 repetitions with, but this is something that's going to impact your metabolism and force your body to stabilize, and that's what your abdominals do. So by lifting weights that are maybe in the 6 to 8 repetition range and the weight that goes with that, you're causing more stress on your abdominals. You're forcing them to work harder, and then every time you exhale, you're also using them to keep your spine safe and to keep your stability. So this is going to do much more for you than any other exercise. So first thing you want to do is start thinking about using those abdominals every time you exhale in an exercise. And the more you do it, like everything else, it becomes a habit. And then you'll realize that you are using them to stabilize your spine. You're pulling them in tightly each time you exhale in every single repetition in the gym. Now, another thing that drives me nuts, and it's not only on the abdominal machines, it's pretty much on every machine, is people who come in and think that they can rack the whole machine. And what that means is that they get on that machine and they take that pin and they put it at the absolute bottom of the machine. Those machines are not made to be used that way. And if you're using them that way, you better be a 500-pound shredded bodybuilder, because otherwise you're not doing that machine properly. And most people will never have enough strength, and even really strong people won't, to put that pin at the bottom of the rack and use every single plate that has come with that machine. So Don't make that a goal. The goal is always to use the correct muscle to do the correct movement, and that's how you get your results. The second biggest mistake is bad form. And whether you know you're doing bad form or not, that's another reason to always get with a trainer, even just once a month, to brush up on things that you're doing, because it's bad habits that get us in trouble. And those are just things that we keep doing over and over again. And many times I've had people say, oh, well, I saw so-and-so doing this in the gym, and I thought they knew what they were doing, so I decided to do that exercise too. Well, it turns out that that particular person wasn't doing the exercise correctly to begin with, so then the next person's going to do it wrong, and then they're probably going to add something to that, and then the next person who sees them is going to do it wrong, and that's how these things perpetuate. And then we end up with, well, everybody's doing it at the gym this way, so it must be right, and again, completely wrong. I mean, even to the point where I know I've had arguments with people, it's like, well, just because everybody's doing it that way doesn't mean it's right. And that has to do with crunches. And of course, all the variations of crunches that have evolved into some really weird moves that I just don't even know how they got that way. But the biggest thing is whenever people are doing crunches and they are doing them on an incline or a decline or even just the regular flat bench, and they're going as fast as they can, or they're doing a really small range of motion. And I'm going to go over with you how you should be doing a crunch properly. One of the things I've seen people do is the crossover crunches, and you might be familiar with that. It's where you touch your elbow to your knee, and that's really not how you're supposed to be doing that either. So we're going to get into that a little bit later. And it really should be common sense that you shouldn't be pulling on your head or bobbing your chin up and down when you're doing crunches. How does that have anything to do with your abdominals, using the abdominals to lift your spine? So if you find that your neck is hurting, your head is hurting, your shoulders, elbows, something is hurting other than your abdominals, then you're probably not doing those crunches correctly. So when you are doing your crunches, you want to make sure you keep your eyes and chin up on the ceiling, and that's going to help keep your neck neutral. And then you want to use your fingertips to support your head, which means not grabbing the back of your neck. You're actually going to take two fingers and put them at the base of your skull and let the base of your skull just rest back in those fingers. It's almost like you're giving yourself a little massage at the very bottom of your skull. And that's what you want to do to support the head while keeping it looking at the ceiling as you tighten your abdominals and use them to pull your body upward in that small range of motion that they do. Now, when it comes to those bicycle things or the elbow to knee that I was talking about earlier, well, you don't want to actually touch your elbow and your knee. You want to have a small side movement because that's supposed to be working your obliques, and they just work to rotate your body a little bit to one side or the other, depending on which side they're on. So you want to think more like having a laser coming out of your armpit and going towards your knee. So your elbow is not really going to touch your knee, but your armpit is going to angle exactly at your knee. And that's how you're going to work those obliques. And it's not a full-on crunch, so you're not going to get the entire abdominal wall, but you're going to be focusing on the obliques, which are on the upper right and left side of the abdominals, right underneath what I guess we would call the bra line or your lower chest. Now, there's actually a bunch of other exercises that I could lump into this category of bad form, but I've actually put them into their own mistake category of wrong exercises, which we're about to get to. But mistake number three is body fat. If your body fat is too high, you're never going to see the abdominals, no matter how strong they are or how shapely they are. And yes, you can have shape underneath pounds of fat, but you can't see them because they're covered. So one of the first things you need to take stock in is, am I too fat? Is there too much body fat on my abdominals for me to be able to see them? And for some people, it's a yes, and for other people, it's a no. So if your body fat is high, or if you can pinch an inch, you're probably not going to be seeing your abdominals. And no matter how many crunches or side bends or crazy ab exercises you do, you're never going to see them until you get some of the weight off. And seeing a muscle really is a function of leanness. It doesn't mean you don't have any just because you can't see it. It just means that you're not lean enough to see it. And you know what? For some people, that's okay. Just knowing that the different muscles are strong and they're capable of doing what they're supposed to is fine. You don't have to be super shredded all the time to be in great shape. You have to have your muscles work properly. Yes, so now we come to mistake number four, which is what I call wrong exercises, or maybe bad exercises. It's kind of when bad form and bad exercises collide. And the biggest one of these is the hanging leg raise. And yes, I did a whole video on that on YouTube called Leg Raise Lies. So go check that out because I go through in detail why they're ineffective, even though people say that, oh, I feel my abs. And I explained in the video why you feel them, but you're not really using them. When we call them leg raises, for another word, then it's whether it's on the floor or you're using an incline or decline bench or the Roman chair, or sometimes people call it the captain's chair. Whenever your legs are completely straight and you're lifting them off the floor, up and down, and sometimes people are even having other people push the legs away from them, you're not targeting the abdominals. The abdominals are bracing you, so you will feel some activity there. But what that hanging leg raise is doing, or that straight leg raise is doing, it's using the hip flexors that are in the front and top of the legs. And they are also in the same area as some abdominal muscles, but that doesn't mean you're actually using them. And of course, doing exercises like that, that are not targeting the abdominals and are only pulling and putting more stress on your hip flexors and making that tighter, is going to affect your posture. And one of the things I go over in the video is that it's actually been shown to cause degenerative disc disease because of the fact of the pressure that you're putting on your back when you're doing those exercises. Now, for some reason, not every trainer got the memo that these are not good lower abdominal exercises. Like the other day, I was helping a friend of mine and I was having them do some lower abdominal exercises, that real small pelvic tilt type movement. And we're going to get into detail on that too, so you know exactly what you should be doing. And I turn around to go do something else and I come back and there's another trainer there having him hold onto his legs as the trainer throws those straight legs down. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're doing everything I just did. So sometimes you have to do your own research and get your own opinions, because not everybody does do their research. Fortunately, there's a lot of trainers that I've seen in my experience that just kind of do what everybody else is doing. They are still doing exercises from 20 years ago that we know are bad for you. Not even that there's little benefit, but that could actually harm you. So again, this day and age, it's so easy to research things and get multiple sources so that you actually have a true, correct idea of what is right and wrong. So of course, there is a link in the show notes on the hanging leg raise lies. And actually on my YouTube channel, there is a whole playlist called Fitness Facts. And you will find that one there along with some other things that people shouldn't be doing that they're doing. And hopefully it'll give you not only a good idea of why you shouldn't be doing them and what you should be doing instead, but also give you that knowledge so that when you see everybody doing these wrong things in the gym, you're not going to be tempted to do them. And I've had that question before. Why is everybody doing it all wrong? So you said that they accuse me of thinking that everybody's doing everything wrong. And I'm like, well, yeah, pretty much 90% of the people in here are doing things wrong. You can't go by everything you see. Just because everybody's doing it, you know, doesn't make it right. I mean, the emperor doesn't really have new clothes on, you know what I mean? And if you don't get that reference, then I'm in trouble. Now, the only real way to work those lower abdominals is a pelvic tilt. And yes, you can make that pelvic tilt more challenging by having your legs straight up in the air, but that doesn't mean you're using your legs. You are still curling the hips towards the ceiling. It's also called a reverse crunch. And if you think of how a real crunch goes, you have maybe a quarter range of motion. Your upper back barely comes off the floor. That's being pulled from the abdominals. That's why you can't go very high. So if you're doing the same thing in reverse, but for the lower half, it's going to be a small movement. Usually, I'll start people out with just a regular pelvic tilt so they can feel how those lower abs can push into the ground and move the hips. Because again, it's spinal flexion, and for the lower half, it's of that lower spine. So by pushing the lower back into the floor, you start to feel how you can rock your hips back and forth and then tap into those lower abdominals. And then, of course, if you want to make it more challenging, no, you don't add weight. You just put your legs in the air, bent at a 90-degree angle. And that way, you have a little bit of resistance there. And then as you get stronger and stronger, you can go to a straight leg. Now, I know there's also the hanging leg raise straps, and there are ways to do those exercises correctly. And there are some people that are strong enough to do it. And I've probably seen maybe one or two out of 20 in the gym that actually are strong enough to control their abs and to make that pelvic tilt motion while they're hanging and then control it on the way down. Otherwise, most people are just swinging their legs back and forth, and they're really not accomplishing anything. Yes, they feel it in the abdominals because the abs are bracing, because it has to somehow stabilize you so you don't fall over when you're swinging your legs that much. But that doesn't mean that they're activating anything or that you're using even close to the lower abdominals. And because that's the other thing too, is when you're doing a leg raise, even if it's a reverse crunch and your legs are in the air and you're doing that perfectly reverse curl, it's got to be slow. It's got to be very slow and incremental. There's not a whole lot of muscle down there and you've got to control it the whole way. There's a whole lot of work and strength that has to be done before somebody can get to that point. And after doing my research for the video, because I've always known that those are bad exercises and I've never given them to clients or nor will I do them in a class. But, you know, after doing a little deeper research, finding out that they really cause some disc disease, that was pretty prominent. It's something that a lot of people don't know, and they don't realize that it's that repetition over time that does this type of damage. I mean, that's how people a lot of times end up with bone on bone and no cartilage, because just over time things wear down. And when you're dealing with your back that doesn't have a whole lot of cushioning to begin with, and you're actually doing something that is going to make it degenerate, I just don't understand why you wouldn't do a little more research into it. If you don't believe me, just talk to some chiropractors. They'll probably tell you the same thing. Again, do the research, and when in doubt, just don't do it, because there's no sense in something that feels fine now, but we know for sure 100% is going to harm you in the future. Go watch that video because there's some really cool graphics and it'll make a lot more sense. And also I show you how to do the exercises correctly. Now, this is not a separate mistake. This is part two of the, you know, exercises gone bad. And that is your broomstick twists, or sometimes, God forbid, people take a barbell and put it behind their back and they twist side to side. Not going to do anything for your waist. You're not going to burn fat off of the abdominals by doing that. You are, however, going to hurt your spine. And the same thing goes for side bends. Oh my gosh, I can't believe how many people I still see doing this, whether they're holding a weight or not, and most of them are. And of course, using too heavy of a weight, again, causing more disc damage and not doing anything for the abdominals. Okay, spinal flexion is one thing, but using the abdominals to flex it is another. You're not going to be using the majority of them to go side to side. Pointless exercises, don't do them. Maybe you want to use it to stretch. That's fine. Doing a stretching motion of a twist side to side as you are moving very slowly and very deliberately and not forcing a range of motion. The same thing with the side bend, just slowly stretching into it on either side is fine. But majority of times I see people just rocketing back and forth, whether it's side bends or broom twists, and it's just asking for trouble. And I still don't understand why people don't understand the concept of spot reduction and how that does not work. You can work a specific muscle all day long and it's not going to reduce the fat in that area. The fat has to come off with your caloric restriction or cardiovascular exercise. So there's a lot more to it. But for some reason, the whole spot reduction myth will not die. And speaking of myths, there's a few more that kind of fall into that same category. And those have to do with the infomercials for abdominal training equipment. Let's just keep in mind that the abdominals pull the body together from the top to the bottom and bottom to the top. And there are also muscles that contribute to that side-to-side bend, but that's mostly your spinal erectors, which are on either side of your spine, and those aren't your abdominals. Learning a little bit of anatomy is a good thing because it can help you understand what you should be doing and why you should be doing it and how you should be doing it. Mistake number five is what I call equipment, because I don't know what else to categorize it as. And it kind of goes into that infomercial thing too. The first one is the electronic stim pads. And of course, now a lot of people have their own TENS unit to stimulate some of the muscles and help them either repair, recover, whatever. But I'm talking about the ones that are specifically made to have little pads that go onto your abdominals and they release an electronic stimulation. And you'll see them in the infomercials and still on some magazines and stuff like that. They send electronic pulses through the belts that are supposed to tone your muscles. And what they're really designed for is people who have muscles that have completely atrophied or somehow have not gotten enough blood flow to them so that they can be stimulated. And of course, if you're already a normal person, it's not going to strengthen the muscles on their own. And if it did, it would have to be at such a high setting that you'd have to be doing a crunch. I mean, and that's going to be downright painful. that's not going to work at all. Again, it's going back to using something for what it's intended to be used for, and that is one that's used to help muscles that can't do it themselves. Sitting there with an electronic stimulation belt on is not going to train the abdominals, and of course, you know, it won't spot reduce. And that also goes along with what they call the tummy belts, and those are those neoprene type belts that people will wrap around them, and also the sauna suits, you know, those silver suits that people can get into and sweat like crazy. Well, if those worked, then everybody who sweated in those areas would have teeny tiny waists, and pretty much everybody here in Florida would be skinny. And that's not the case, because heat alone is not going to make you drop body fat. It's going to make you drop water. You're going to need to rehydrate, but it's not body fat. So yes, you can lose a lot of water and it changes the scale quite a bit, but that doesn't mean it's going to change the way your body looks. And in fact, they're yet another thing that is actually dangerous, because if you get overly dehydrated, you're going to get dizzy, you're going to pass out, there's other bodily functions that aren't going to work properly. And again, it's just really, really dangerous. And then you've got people that on top of that will wear the sauna suits in a sauna, just asking for a recipe for disaster. So like anything else, there's no quick fix. There's no easy answer. You have to put in the work, because of course, if it was easy, wouldn't everybody have great abs already? So now we're down to, believe it or not, finally, number six. And number six is insufficient range of motion. And we kind of touched on that earlier. What that means is not doing the right range of motion. And for a lot of people, it's doing too little of a range of motion. There's many times that you might see people doing either crunches on one of the machines that kind of looks like you're sitting and you're crunching down, or they're doing the rope crunch from the pulley, or even doing their abdominal training or their crunches or anything else. And their range of motion is short, it's fast, it's not getting the full stretch of the muscle. It's not going to do anything if you're not getting your full stretch of the muscle. To compare it, if you think about doing a bicep curl, if you took your bicep curl up and squeezed your bicep and then took it down maybe 1 inch, and that was your range, whole range of motion, it's not going to change that much. You're not going to get stronger. You're not going to see anything change. And that's what people do a lot of times with crunches, especially in the rope crunch and on machines, because they're just kind of bobbing down, up and down, up and down, and they're not getting a full range of motion. The muscles are meant to be stretched and then flexed. And that's where the stability ball comes in to being one of the best exercises for the abdominals. And I'm going to explain that to you in a second. So let's be clear. I'm not saying that the rope crunch and that abdominal machines or crunches are bad exercises. They are not. When they are done incorrectly, they are bad. And since most people will do them with too heavy of a weight and too short of a range of motion, they're not going to be effective. But when done correctly, yes, they will be effective and they will help to strengthen the abdominals. But remember, without getting the body fat off, you're still not going to see them. What do you do instead of all of these different things that you've probably already been doing and shouldn't be? Well, the first thing you're going to do is focus on the form and the feel. And what that means is not only the form of the exercise, but actually feeling the abdominals lift your body. When you think about, again, the small muscles there, using them to actually pull your entire upper body is not going to be that easy. And sometimes it just takes reconnecting the mind to muscle, and maybe you haven't had it yet, so you have to actually start to learn how to target it. And that just means going back to the basics and focusing on tightening the abdominals and using them to lift your body rather than lifting your body and squeezing them. So your crunch is always the best for the majority of your abdominals. And of course, that reverse crunch, or I call it the reverse curl, is what it is, like a pelvic tilt. And that's what you want to do for the lower abdominals. And in, I think, the Hanging Leg Raise Lies video, I also give you the form for the reverse crunch too, so that you know what to do. By far, the most effective thing for your abdominals is the stability ball crunch. And don't just take my word for it. Many years ago, and I hate to say this, but decades ago, there were studies that actually proved that the stability ball stimulated more of the overall abdominal area than any other exercise. The reason is that because with the stability ball, you actually get what's called a pre-stretch or a full stretch in your abdominals. So when you're doing abdominals on the floor, your body's flat, but you're not really stretching the abdominals. They're just kind of there. But with the ball, since you can take your back over the ball, you can actually stretch them. And when you stretch the muscle and then you use it, it's going to be more effective in how it attacks that muscle and strengthens it. And again, using the bicep curl as an example, because that's pretty much easy for everybody to picture in their head, if you didn't come all the way down and stretched your biceps at the bottom and just did a half range of motion, then you're not going to get the same development as somebody who goes to a full range of motion and actually activates the biceps by bending the elbow in order to bring a dumbbell upward. There's a huge difference in how you're using the muscle and where the stressors are in the muscle and how much time under tension is there, and that dictates how well the muscle is going to get strong and therefore tone. Having that pre-stretch over the ball is the most important part of the stability ball exercise. If you are doing crunches on the ball and you're kind of sitting up and then sitting up higher, then you're not doing it right. Again, you might feel your abdominals because they're bracing to hold you on that ball, but you're not activating them to pull yourself up. And in all honesty, if you are truly using the abdominals to pull your body up after that pre-stretch on the stability ball, you will be lucky to do 8 or 10. And in all my years with all my clients, it all started the same way. They get on the ball, they do the crunches, it's like, yeah, I can do it. And then when I teach them how to actually do it correctly, they get like 5. And they start to realize, oh, that's a big difference. And that's how they start to learn to use the abdominals to lift the body. Now, I just recently taught a class and I put the entire class up on YouTube, but I'm going to be putting a clip where I explain to them how to do the abdominal crunch over the ball and how to do it effectively and how to feel each section. I'm going to make a short with that and stick it out there because it kind of really sums it up very well. And I'll put a link here too, but I'm going to try to talk you through it anyway. So when you're on the ball, and I know sometimes it's not so easy to be comfortable on the ball, you have to ease into this. You can't just start, you know, by going gangbusters. So if you've never used the ball before, just one step at a time and let this be your ultimate goal. But if you have used the ball, then when you're doing a crunch, you want to stretch as far over the ball as you can. Now keep in mind, when you stretch over the ball, don't look behind you. Keep your eyes and chin on the ceiling just like you would for any other crunch. You want to make sure that head is nice and supported and steady. And when you stretch over that ball, you want to take a deep breath and you want to feel the entire abdominal wall stretch. That means from the lower abdominals, which are way down there by your tailbone, but on the front of your body, so that's how low it needs to go, all the way up to those upper abdominals too. And then once you feel that stretch in those lower abs, then you need to pull those lower abs into your spine or into your tailbone, and then the belly button. And then you need to tighten the upper abdominals to pull your body over that stability ball. And when I say over, I really mean up, because you should be coming parallel to the floor and not much higher than that. So if your whole body's coming off that ball, you're not really working the abdominals. Every single repetition has to follow that same format, which means every single repetition is stretch over the ball until you feel the lower abdominal stretch, then pull those lower abdominals in, then pull the belly button either into the spine or push your back into the ball. That's sometimes an easier way to feel it when you're not strong enough. And then target those abdominal muscles to lift your body slightly upward. And yes, every single repetition, I refer to it as 1, 2, 3, kind of like a zipper. You've got to feel all three sections. And that's why it is so difficult and challenging, but it's also why it's so much more effective. Next time you do that, try to feel the deep stretch in the lower abs and then pull them in and then the belly button and all the way up. Now, the other thing is, if you're not strong enough to do that or you don't have that mind-muscle connection, then focus on just pressing your spine into the ball and not coming off the ball. That will help you to feel some of those abdominals, and then hopefully you can start to learn how to actually use them to lift that body slightly. And of course, a lot of that kind of goes back to the number one secret, which is the form and the feel, making sure you're feeling the right muscle doing the work. Now, the third exercise or third thing that you should do to really target those abdominals is your planks. They do not have to be held for 5 minutes. If you can do about 1 minute on a regular plank, whether it's an elbow plank or a straight arm plank, then you're ready to add some variations that are more challenging. If it's some goal that you want to have for a certain time period to do the plank, fine. But as far as I'm concerned, if you can do more than a minute, you can do more challenging planks. And those are the ones where maybe you're lifting one leg and then the other, or lifting one arm and then the other, or there's a whole slew of them. Some of them are tapping out to the side, and then there's scorpion, and then there's all these other different versions of it. Now, the thing is, planks are not usually done correctly either. A lot of people will say they have issues in their shoulder and their neck and they can't do it. Well, that tells me that they're not doing it correctly to begin with. With planks, you need to target your back almost more than the abdominals. So that means that when you get in that plank position, you need to pull those shoulders back and down. You should be squeezing your shoulder blades together almost more tightly than your abdominals, because your back and that whole rib cage is part of your core. If your back isn't strong and you don't have a good program for training your back, you're not going to have a strong core to begin with. Focus on keeping your back and your shoulder blades tight. That's also going to help with your posture and your alignment for proper shoulder function and take away a lot of pain in the shoulders. The other thing is, a lot of people will have their arms too far in front of them. You really almost want to feel like your elbows are underneath you a little bit, and that's actually going to line them up then so that your shoulders, elbows, or if you're doing a straight arm, your wrist are all in a straight line. The easiest way is to pretty much start like you're going to do a push-up and then bend your knees and get into a full plank position if you can't do a full plank, or push up into one and hold it. If you're feeling your shoulders, then you're not doing it correctly. Got to pull those shoulders back and down and really focus on the back and the abdominals working together to make you nice and strong. And since I've had planks in several different programs that I've put out, they're also on YouTube, and some of the variations too. So you can double check that so you can learn the proper form at your own pace. All right, so now you are armed with the 6 biggest mistakes and 3 things that you need to focus on in order to get your abdominals in good shape. And remember, it's also about the body fat. So if you don't know how to eat correctly, or you're not sure how to use food to fuel your metabolism, then you're going to want to check out my 28-day fitness makeover program. It's the workshop program, but in a condensed version. And there is a whole module on that that covers nutrition. And it's everything from the foods you need to eat, how to make a meal plan, when you should be eating, the times, the quantities, like everything that you need to know. The 28-day program is a great quick start for your weight loss program. It has workouts that can be done at home, and I just recently added to it workouts that can be printed out and used as a log, and it has the pictures for taking it to the gym as well. So if you've already taken the fitness makeover, just go back in there, check it out, because there's also those printable sheets for doing the workouts in the gym. And of course, it also goes through goal setting and what you really need to do to stay motivated, in addition to the exercise and the nutrition, because it's all the 3 things together that are going to get you in your best shape ever. As always, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to giving you all the insights to help you reach all of your goals and to help you get your best body ever. For more details about this podcast and other episodes, visit fitgirlpodcast.com.